Thank you. You may be seated.
Court is ready to hear argument in the consolidated cases Shanks against Treadway and Rice against Rice.
May it please the court, Ms. Susan Hayes and Mr. Richard Kalfus will present argument for the petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Ms. Hayes will open with the first 7 minutes, and Ms. Hayes will present the rebuttal.
May it please the court. The question presented today is whether, when reviewing a divorce decree to enter a qualified domestic relations order, the trial court has to keep in mind the boundaries of the Texas Constitution or put on blinders to the law. Of any principle in Texas law, perhaps the best known is our distinct community property system. That which is earned within the marriage is community property, and that which is earned outside of the marriage is separate property. The decree between Shanks and Treadway, awarded to Treadway as alternate payee of a retirement benefit plan, 1/4 of the community property interest in that plan. The parties had been married at that point for the entire time that Mr. Shanks was a participant in the plan. Thus, at the time of divorce, the entire plan or the total plan was community property. The problem that is presented to the trial court now some 20 years later is how to devise a qualified domestic relations order or a quadro that will accurately value and then apportion that community property interest in the plans. Turning to the language of the plan, if this plan were to be read as literally as the Court of Appeals attempted to read it or did read it, then it would only divide Ms. Treadway's interest in the pension plan. The decree language only discusses a pension plan. But we know, knowing what Mr. Shanks had and knowing what the court had to do, and that was divide his community property interest in his retirement, that it was dividing two plans. Mr. Shanks had both a pension or a defined benefit plan and a defined contribution plan. Also, looking at the language of the plan, it is describing the plan as it existed in 1981. It is all community property then. The total of that community property interest, or 1/4 thereof, will be paid to her if, as, and when paid.
The Court of Appeals held it enough that the trial court had no authority to award Treadway a portion of the pension benefits that was not community property. You agree with that?
The trial court?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I do agree that, but the trial court doesn't have the authority to award future separate property.
But the Court of Appeals felt like it did, but
right, that oops, you should have appealed. And the position that puts litigants in is trying to appeal a future contingency. You know, the Court of Appeals called it res judicata, and it's not. If to have litigated that in 1981, Mr. Shanks would have to have had invoked future facts. Well, what if I work another 20 years and it ends up being worth $2.7 million instead of, you know, about $100,000? You don't want parties litigating future facts. And that's why the state, after prompting by the federal law, has developed the quadro proceeding.
Well, what about if the appeal issue is the law requires you to cut off what the property is as of the date of the divorce, whether it's separate or community, and thus anything from the date of divorce forward is going to be my separate property if it comes out of one or both of these plans, and therefore it's improper to give the other party a part of it.
If decree language had specifically stated, I am awarding Ms. Treadway his future separate property, then it should have been appealed. But the decree here didn't do that.
Well, it says she receives 25% of his plans if and when it's paid.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't the answer to that, but judge, doing that will give her 25% of whatever separate property accrues following the date of divorce.
It's not, because at that time, and I think even today, the if, as, and when paid language doesn't mean value it at retirement. And of anything the Dallas Court of Appeals did and did wrong, I think that is the most dangerous to the jurisprudence of this state. That language means exactly what it says. if Mr. Shanks gets his retirement, meaning he doesn't work for Enron, he stays with American, then he has to pay her share. When he is paid and as he is paid, whether it is a lump sum or monthly benefits. That is a phrase that recognizes the contingent nature of this asset. It is not a phrase that says you have to value it at retirement.
Well, what do you do about the trial judge's choice when that question is put to the trial judge? What do you mean by this statement? And the judge says, I mean, it's 25% of the retirement benefits. Isn't that what happened here?
Meaning that how do you guide the trial judge?
Didn't the trial judge in this case, I think it was the Treadway case, where Judge Gibbs has specifically asked the question, well, we look at this and it says, it looks like you're saying 25% of the pension benefits, but surely you mean 25% of what's accrued as of this time and not in the future. And he said, no, I mean number one.
Are you talking about the notes that were attempted to admit in the record at the beginning? He did. What the trial judge does is exactly what Gibbs did on the motion for reconsideration of Quadros here. He said, I couldn't do that. I can't do that. You can't give out separate property. I think his quote was, that conflicts with every Texas law we have.
Well, I got the impression that Gibbs was saying, whoops, I made a mistake in that original decree.
No.
You're saying...
And when they brought those notes into the court, no one even could remember who wrote them. No one could remember who drafted the decree. And it brings home the very problem these cases bring up. We don't have the 1981 record as a whole. We don't know how many drafts the decree went through. We don't know when those notes were written in relation to when the final decree was drafted. And that's why we're stuck with the language of the decree as read within the context of Texas community property laws.
So what you're really arguing here at Treadway is the Court of Appeals made a mistake reversing the Quadro because the Quadro was in fact consistent with the original judgment.
Correct. You don't have to modify this decree to get to those Quadros. You have to add language to it. But that's part of the nature of Quadros. It's part of the nature of passage of time with a retirement plan or plans. You know, if you think of the community property interest, you know, as a corpus, as a right to certain benefits, and don't think of it too literally, this system works. Where the cases get interesting and where I think the divorcees get a little wily is when the plans change over time. You know, I cannot recall the exact name of the case right now, but there was a case where the employer literally changed the name of the plan, changed the nature of the plan. And the plan participant said to the court, you know, yippee, I win, I don't have to pay now. And the court responded with, no, you still have a right to those benefits because you worked during the marriage. You know, it's akin to tracing community property interests through bank accounts. You think about what is that community property interest in a retirement benefit package or plan or plans as it is in this case. How does it change over time, and then how do we parcel out that community property interest as it existed at the time of divorce plus earnings?
Any other questions? Thank you, Counselor.
May I please the court? It seems to me that the policy issue this court faces can be and should be resolved in the same way that you resolved it when you decided Lehman recently. We're dealing here with a judgment, and we're dealing with what a judgment means. One of the things you said in Lehman was that an order is final only if it clearly and unequivocally states that it finally disposes of all claims and all parties. Now, you were dealing there basically with a procedural problem. What is a final judgment that is appealable? Here you are dealing with a constitutional problem. Has separate property been disposed of in violation of the Constitution? And it seems to me that the same approach will at least aid in preventing these problems in the future. If you will say a judgment disposes of a spouse's separate property only if it clearly and unequivocally states that it is awarding one spouse's separate property to the other spouse. In other words, I think it's obvious what I'm saying. if we're going to take a constitutionally based right away from someone, the judgment should clearly say that's what it's doing. If that is in the judgment, then A, you have an appealable issue, and B, 20 years later, you know what was done if that issue was not appealed.
If that's we do that in the family law context, why wouldn't we do that in others? I'm just trying to look further with other constitutional interests, that if they're not expressly set forth, then the judge is not intending to do that.
Well, I think that that's certainly a viable approach in any situation where you're dealing with the removal or the loss of a constitutional right.
So homesteads and, I mean, just any, the whole, we've got a pretty long constitution here. Isn't it?
I understand, and I certainly cannot be in a position making a commitment for all the constitutional rights, but it seems to me in this kind of situation, particularly because you're going to get these cases, and I don't know how much longer you're going to get them, probably as long as there's a court, but you're going to continue to get them because lawyers are sloppy in their drafting, judges are sloppy, or at least careless in what they sign. The parties are not fully...
So a judge awards the 100% of the homestead to the wife and then offsetting property to the husband, everybody agrees, but they don't put in the divorce decree that it's the homestead. They just say one half of the property, or 100% of the property described in the attached exhibit and located at such and such. I mean, you say that we're going to presume that since they didn't use the word homestead, that they did not intend to give 100% of the home to the wife.
I think each one of these is going to have to be fact specific. What I'm striving for is an approach that will make it clear how to look at the decree. And when you're taking separate property, that's as far as I can go today.
These decrees look to me on their face that they're giving 50% of what the husband actually received. And to me, that's pretty clear. How would adding the word separate property make that any clearer?
Well, if you apply the rule that you must apply, which is to harmonize the entire decree, to look at the entire decree and to give effect to the entire decree, then you see that the purpose of this decree, and the only purpose of this decree, was to dispose of the community property of the parties. That's what the judge said he was doing at the very beginning of the decree. That's what he said again when he started dividing the property. That's all that Gloria asked for when she filed her petition, and both in the pleading for the division of the property and again in the prayer. The court said he was dividing only community property. It said he was going to divide the property in an equitable manner. And you cannot, by any stretch of the imagination, say that it is equitable, that is an equitable division, if the court gave to Gloria 18 years' worth of retirement benefits that were earned after they were divorced.
Mr. Countess, I had a question. In this, I might be a little bit confused because it wasn't clear to me from the Rice opinion, but in both of these cases, both the Treadway case and in the Rice case, the result of the Court of Appeals opinion was to essentially award the percentage against the entire pension amount as opposed to just the percentage that would qualify as a community interest. Am I correct?
The Court of Appeals results were in opposite.
Explain this to me. The argument in Treadway is that the Dallas Court of Appeals said that the quadro had to reflect the judgment in the trial court, which was 25% of the pension benefits.
Total.
In the Rice case, the Court of Appeals concluded that the wife concluded that the judgment included interest that accrued after the divorce. The language in the Rice opinion said that the wife's interest was 50% of the pension benefits as when paid at the retirement.
Well, as 50% when paid, but 50% of the community interest in the pension plan, not 50% of the total. In other words, in the Reese case, which I have, I won in the Court of Appeals representing the husband because the court said she's only entitled, under our construction of this decree, she's only entitled to 50% of the community interest in the pension plan. In the Shanks case, the Dallas Court of Appeals, as I understand it, said she's entitled to 50% of the total package, but what was earned before and after. So we have an opposite results from the Court of Appeals in these two cases.
But the Court of Appeals in this case, in your case, said, well, we're just going to presume that the trial court knew the law and followed it.
They said that, but that's not all that they said. They looked specifically at the language of the decree. And when you read the entire decree, I think there is a very good case to be made for exactly what the Court of Appeals did, because after the judge makes it clear in the decree that he's dividing only community property and dividing it equitably, and when he turns to this property, he says, we have a community retirement plan, and it is a vested interest, and I am dividing it by giving the wife 50% of it. And there's some language about if and when, and we know what that means on the survey. And then he said, she shall receive 50% of such retirement or pension benefit. Now, such is hanging out here. Well, such has got to mean something. And the only thing it can mean, because that's the only thing it's referenced, as in the decree, is the community-owned vested retirement plan that exists in all of the force.
Is there any way in the Treadway case, an award was made of 25%, when I suppose 50% would be the norm under community property law? Is there any way that the trial court could have thought, well, I'm going to cut down that interest, but then award that you get it if, as, and when?
Justice O'Neill, if you don't mind, I think I'll let Ms. Hayes respond to that, since that's her case. I don't want to be in a position of taking a position one way or the other on her facts. If it's okay with you, I think I'd let you do that.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court's ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Sean Casey and Mr. W. Dane Clay will present argument for the respondents. Mr. Casey will open in the first 10 minutes.
May it please the court, my name is Sean Casey and I represent the person designated as the respondent on this petition for review, Gloria Jean Reese. I take great exception to two things. One is I don't think this case is about putting blinders on the Constitution. I think this case is about whether or not we're going to accept plain English when it comes time to reading decrees. Mr. Countess indicates that we're going to get a floodgate, you know, that we continue to have these issues raised on these cases, these pension cases, as long as there is a court. But frankly, I think this court has already made a ruling back in 1990 in the Baxter versus Ruddle case, which said that plain English is what's going to do that. And this issue has not really raised its ugly head until the first court of appeals in the Reese case then began to do this revisionism, this looking at the language in the context of what the case law is at the time.
But it does look as if when a trial court told a spouse, I'm going to take what's unquestionably yours, the law is clear as day about it, and give it to the other side. And if that was crystal clear to everybody, it looks like there'd be an appeal.
Well, and I agree. I think there should be an appeal. But the problem is that in terms of the way we enforce our decrees and the way we look at our decrees, that it is crystal clear that, in fact, she's entitled to 50% of the entire amount of the benefit. Again, they're trying to rely on...
But you admit she couldn't have gotten it at the time.
I do admit that. That's correct. I mean, in terms of the constitutional prohibition, that would be true. But again, you must understand the Berry case at that point in time hadn't been decided, and there's all these cases that are related to in terms of pension as to, you know, when do you evaluate the pension.
And has Berry helped things? Or
Berry clarified the things for the position that they're now claiming, that, you know, you only get it valued as of the date of the divorce. And so the fact of the matter is Berry did what Reese should have done, but did not do, and now sitting there trying to rely on coming back and you know, again, using this revisionist history, if you will, and implying...
So would you agree with the Houston First, then, if this were a post-Berry divorce?
No, because I think at that point in time it would have been very obvious. Again, Mr. Cash talks about sloppy lawyers and inaccurate, but I mean, that's not something for this court to review. I mean, I think whether... Berry or not Berry, the fact of giving away such a property is impermissible. But it's something that has to be appealed at the time, or, you know, may not. again, Mr. Countess sits there and talks about, you know, we don't have a record, we don't have this, so we're, and the floodgate that's going to open is if this court does not reverse the first court of appeals, because at that point in time, we're going to say, well, what really happened here was this, we don't have a record, and, you know, you need to sit there and look at this, you know, phrase, and, you know, the way this comma was referred, and then we start making findings of fact and conclusions of law where there are none. We're sitting there trying to construe decrees. Basically what the...
Well, but the argument is, if it was all that clear, then why didn't somebody object to having their property taken?
But the fact of the matter is I think it's very... I mean, I can't respond to that. And all I will tell you is I know this court has seen, I'm sure, many a decree where arguments have been waived. But, I mean, that's the whole idea of res judicata. When does this thing die? And I mean, this probably wouldn't even come up if it were not for the fact that subsequently we've got this ability to enforce decrees with a quandary. I mean, if I'm quite convinced that if we sat there and handed this decree without a quandary to Goodyear and said, okay, she gets 50%, I mean, these people that are not trained lawyers, but are pension benefit administrators, are going to say, yeah.
Well, then why can't you just do the quadro at the time of the decree? Why can't you do the quadro at the time of the decree then?
Well, you do now, but in 1980...
No, but I'm talking about back then. Why wasn't that done then?
Quadros didn't exist in 1980. That was something the federal government put in subsequent to 1980. basically with ERISA, and I'm not exactly sure when it came in, but I think it was in the mid-80s. So at this point in time, in the old decrees, those of us that have been practicing 30 years, you have these constructive trust agreement, and I will tell you, you know, trying to get your ex-husband or ex-wife to be a constructive trustee for you is not a very pleasant experience. The federal government, that's why they put in this quadro stuff, so that you can enforce these things on your own. But again, I mean, I agree with you, Justice. I don't, you know, why the attorney did not sit there and stand up and yell.
Well, the obvious response is because it wasn't that clear. In fact, they didn't think it said that.
I think again, that's sort of the argument that the First Court of Appeals does, where we all of a sudden impose infallibility on our judges and our lawyers, and I don't think that's the case. Because again, the First Court of Appeals says, well, surely, you know, the trial judge meant this, and surely the trial judge meant that. But this court knows as well as anybody, trial judges make mistakes. They make mistakes in characterization. They make mistakes in valuations.
You don't disagree that separate property would be awarded based on the way you want us to rule?
Well, in hindsight, that's not necessarily true, because if you work out on the Taggart formula that they put in there and did the number of years he worked, actually she would be getting like 90% of the community portion by getting 50% of the overall. And I put that in the brief, that you can actually do an assumption and say that it's a disproportionate split. But in deference, I mean, realistically...
But there wasn't anything in this decree that indicated there was an intent to give a disproportionate split of that asset.
Well, but the thing is, there's nothing in any decree that says disproportionate. That's what finding the fact and conclusion is all about. I mean, if you look at any decree, you cannot tell whether it's disproportionate, because it says you get X, Y, Z stock, or you get this, or you get that. I mean, unless you sit there and figure out, you know, go back and check the inventories and go back and check the testimony, there's no way to tell whether or not this is a disproportionate split. So, I mean, to me, that argument is totally irrelevant. Again,
well, I thought this particular decree, though, awarded half the benefits.
It did. But I'm trying
to say, so, I mean, so if you just talk about now trying to rework it in a way that gives 90% of the community, then you really are reworking it.
I'm agreeing with that in hindsight, because at the time, we, you know, if you said 50%, if he had quit the day after, you know, obviously then 50% there. If he worked 3 years, you know, then she'd only be getting like maybe 55%. The fact of the matter is he worked for quite a period of time, so it actually works out to 50% of the overall, works out to like, you know, 85 or 90% of the community portion. But again, that is using the hindsight of the Berry and knowing how to evaluate and knowing how to know what it is. You know, my feeling, again, is the real policy that this court has decided is whether or not they want to put pension people on notice that they have to know what the current law was at the time the decree was entered. Or are we going to follow the English and do what Baxter versus Rowland, basically shut up this whole line of cases and shut up this argument by saying res judicata and collateral attack is not allowed on a quadro.
You think this is clear, and maybe it is, but if it's not, why, what's wrong with Mr. Counsel's argument that if it's not clear and unequivocal, then we should presume that the trial judge didn't violate the law?
Okay, and you're right, I do assume that it's clear, but even that, he is basing this on something that are not findings of fact and conclusions of law. And so again, those things are to be ignored under the law. So I mean, I mean, in terms of the ambiguity, which, again, I don't think exists, but because if you look in the language, particularly here, it says, or for any other reason becomes entitled to receive retirement or pension benefits. So it makes it sound like that in the future. So, I mean, I think it's very clear that who dropped the ball was the trial attorney for Mr. Reese back in 1980. But I don't think, you know, because my lady decided not to appeal and was happy with the decision, I don't see why she's now being put in the position of having to, you know, defend a new just and right division when there's nothing to divide.
Okay, this decree, though, did not purport to award her any separate property. Is that right?
There's no confirmation of separate property. There's nothing in there that says I hereby, you know,
okay,
order.
So, I mean,
property.
As I understand the decree, it awarded a division of community property, and that was it.
Yes, but again, they keep talking about, say, the following community property. If you look at that, there's a grocery list there, and the pensions are not under that grocery list. It's a separate paragraph. So, I mean, they keep trying to pull paragraph A.
Is there any provision in the decree that purported to award allow each party to keep their own separate? Their own separate property.
There's no confirmation of separate property or anything of that.
Is there any mention of separate property in the decree at all?
I don't believe those two words exist in this decree, Your Honor. I appreciate the court's time.
Thank you, counsel.
Court, please. I appreciate very much that you've given me the opportunity to appear before you, and I'm honored to be here. The issue, one of the principal issues in the Shanks case has to do, and I think this permeates the entire spectrum here, has to do with the precise language of the decree in the lower court. But in the Shanks case, you look first at the language that is in the decree as drafted. And what it said was that the wife will receive a percentage, 25%, of all of the benefits that the husband received. And then it went on later to say, to define this pro rata interest, which it said at 25%, after using the words any and all sums paid to Shank from the plan, not from a portion of it, but from the plan, then it expressly defined that interest as that sum of money equal to 25% of the total sums paid or to be paid to Shanks from such retirement plan. Now, that's key language in the document. And that's what the Dallas Court of Appeals held was unambiguously an apportionment of the total benefits received at retirement.
And you agree with the Court of Appeals that the trial judge didn't have the power to do that at the time?
When you say the power to do that's not quite the case. This was obviously a just and right decision. That's what the court was doing. That's what the trial court did at that time. It was the law, you know, nobody's perfect, especially 20 years ago in these situations. There was an area of uncertainty in Texas law at the time. And the trial judge, on a just and right basis, tried to be fair to everybody concerned. The question came before on this 25%. Is that some sort of compromise? Exactly. It's obvious that that's what he did. That because of the uncertainty and knowing what the total was, he awarded only a 25% interest when her constitutional interest would have been 50% of whatever what was vested.
Well, what if the husband persuaded the court that this is going to result in a division of separate property, and I'm entitled to keep it. I object to this decree to the extent it does that. What would the trial? Did the trial court have discretion to say, never mind, I'm still awarding
on just and right basis? It does.
Your separate property. So you think that's what the court did?
I think on a just and right basis that there is that authority, and you know, that's what the whole line of cases is, that to give him a discretionary interest. And that's exactly what he did. He cut the percentage, but he applied the percentage to the total benefit because he knew that that was to be something that easily could be calculated at the time of retirement. Then you know how much money is there.
But then why does the court include the sentence under a pension plan arising out of past employment? What effect are we supposed to give that sentence?
That's our recital of the case that they started out with. That's what it is.
Well, isn't that what Such is referring to?
There was an interest based upon past employment. That's right. But when he got to the decree, he did not say past employment. In each instance, he said the total benefits at time of retirement, if as and when received, of any and all sums. And it's particularly striking in this case that we have this record of what preceded the actual drafting of this decree. The attorneys sent a question to him, and that's in the record, and asked. So we're trying to draft this decree, and we're confused. Do you mean to give the wife a 25%? And this is the cut. 25% of the total sum paid at retirement, if and when, or do you mean a 25% property interest per formula, and set forth the Taggart formula? The judge specifically rejected the Taggart formula, and when you talk about who did what, the judge is in the record testified. This is my writing here on this note from the attorneys. The judge said, this is correct, pointing to 25% of the total sum paid at retirement, if, as, and when. There was no question in his mind that that's what he intended. Only 25%, but 25% of the total. And then he referred back to the bracket and put brackets around his original notes, which had led to their inquiry. And in those original notes, personally, he simply awarded, in very simple language, 25% of husband retirement at time of retirement, payable as if and when. It's all on a line here. And on the other side, he awarded to the husband 75% retirement. Nothing there about this prior services or in the thing. He very simply divided the profit sharing plan. He looked at the plan as a whole. He divided the profit sharing plan 25-75. So the lawyers went back and drafted the decree accordingly. And that's the plain and unambiguous language of the decree, which the Court of Appeals held. There's no question about it. They didn't even think the case was important enough to publish. No, nothing. It seems so obvious to them in that situation. This language is virtually identical to the language in this court's opinion in Baxter versus Root. So identical, the counsel for Mr. Shanks admits in her petition for review that she cannot succeed unless Baxter versus Rule is either limited in some fashion or overruled or overturned. And that's clear. The language, the decretal language in Baxter versus Rule in two sections, one said we're awarding 37.5% of the gross benefits. The other one clarified further on that, 37.5% of the total benefits. So the total language is identical in both decrees. Rudel said, also used the word gross, whereas in the Shanks decree, it used the words all, any, and all sums, which would be the same as the gross. There's no way that you can distinguish the language on that. Nor should there be any distinction on the basis that Baxter versus Riddle was a an agreed decree as far as the division was concerned, rather than a contested decree, because this court has held on many occasions that there is no basic difference in the interpretation of an agreed decree and a contested decree. Once they're on paper, each has the same binding effect, the same finality. The rules of interpretation are the same. So Baxter versus Rudo made it clear that this is an issue of res judicata. And once that decision is entered and it is not appealed, then you can't come back on a collateral attack either in the same court on quadro or in an appellate court and try to change it. And it's obvious what happened to the judge in this situation, because you keep looking at his decrees in here. I'm talking now about when we got up to the quadro stage. He looked at this thing 17 years later and said, whoops, I must have made a mistake 17 years ago, because I'm sorry, lost my case here. It's obvious from this court's decision in a non-collateral attack case, in a direct appeal case, that recognized a change in the law, or at least a clarification of the law occurring about 1992. And I'll find that.
All right. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Language is unambiguous and did award a just and right division of 25% whenever it's paid, then aren't we affecting the just and right division by going your way? And not making it 50%? I mean,
right. No, because you would be anyway. Because we have future facts that are going to come into play. Mr. Shanks could have changed his jobs the day after the divorce.
No, or I understand that, but can we presume that if the trial court, by if, as, and when, meant whenever they're paid, mm-hmm. be it the day after the divorce or 50 years after the divorce, and the way I'm going to allocate that risk is by dropping her percentage, I think that'll make it all come out in the wash, then if that is the intent, aren't we changing the just and right division of the property by going your way?
We're not, because if you read this decree as a whole, and Mr. Clay would have you excise this one paragraph, which states that it's decreed that the petitioner's pro rata interest shall be defined as that sum of money equal to 25% of the total sum or sums paid or to be paid from such pension or retirement plan. And the trial court here focused on the such that was referring to the past employment.
Well, again,
if you back up and read the pages before this, the court divides up the community estate, the estate of the parties, and gives Ms. Treadway her entire retirement plan, her entire retirement account. It gives her a disproportionate share of the liquid assets. And we don't have a dollar-by-dollar accounting of who got what. And we can't even assume that
that's my question exactly. I mean, we have to presume it's a just and right division.
But just and right doesn't necessarily mean 50% for one.
I understand, but we have to presume that by awarding 25%, he was deciding that that was the correct percentage.
You're kind of ballparking the Taggart formula.
Well, just that he decided 25% is just and right. And if at the time he signed the judgment, he was aware and knew that he was giving her 25% of what may be paid down the road, then how can we mess with that without affecting the just and right division?
I think we affect it either way. Because it depends whether Mr. Shanks continues his employment with American Airlines. He could have changed jobs. He could, or he could say.
Back to my question, if the trial court intended to take that contingency into account by awarding her 25%, then aren't we going back and revising the just and right divisions the trial court actually believed he was awarding?
I think when trial courts divided from the state that includes retirement plans, they by necessity are going to have to deal with that variable that's in the plan. And they can do that either by trying to divide everything else 50-50, if that's what they consider just and right, and dividing this separately and having each party bear the risk, or they can lump it all in together. What we've got here is a short, fairly cursory divorce decree, which sets out to divide the estate of the parties, gives Treadway all of her retirement account, a disproportionate share of the liquid assets, and then a 25% share. Then it goes on, getting back to Justice Hankinson's question, to divide some separate, or to characterize and award some separate property. The court knew it was dividing community property. The court may or may not fully have appreciated that a retirement benefit asset can change dramatically over time, or not at all, or evaporate if the pension plan goes bust. So I understand your concern, but I think we can't escape that problem. Because of the contingent nature of the asset, things will change.
I understand if it's ambiguous. I understand that. Mm-hmm. But if it is not ambiguous, and the trial court did, in fact, intend to award it, however, whenever he retired, whenever that might be, that was the intent, and it's unambiguous that that was the intent, and we go back, and the court took that into account by awarding a lesser percentage, or presuming that's just the right division, it just seems to me that if we were to hold that the intent was unambiguous, we would have to go against you.
You would have to, but I think the only way you get to it's unambiguous is if it states that it will divide out his future
again,
separate
your
property.
Argument depends
if you
on
can read this
ambiguity.
Fairly and not divest him of his separate property, I think you have to.
But only if there's an ambiguity. We
no, I think that the presumption of reading it within the context of the constitutional law applies to that question of law of whether it's ambiguous and determining the ambiguity. You always have to keep that in mind, whether you're determining the initial ambiguity or whether the trial court was determining the question of fact of which way the ambiguity, how to resolve the ambiguity.
I'm not sure I understand.
Okay, let me try it again. The presumption that the trial court is always acting within the bounds of constitutional law always applies. It applies when a trial court or the appellate court determining the question of law of whether the document is ambiguous, you still have to read it keeping in mind that, my God, this guy can't give out future separate property.
Well, but again, that gets us back to the original question. If the trial judge did something he could not do and it was erroneous, that was appealable. If it clearly did that, this is a collateral attack.
It's not, though, because you're requiring the parties to be clairvoyant. If you know, if any, two parties can fairly read this two different ways, it's ambiguous.
Again, my question is, your argument depends on us finding it ambiguous.
Right. But if Mr. Shanks or his counsel is reading this in 1981, they've just done the divorce, it's his past plan, the corpus of that community estate is all, the corpus of the retirement plan is all community property at that time, there is nothing for them to appeal at that time. It takes the future facts for there to be something appealable. The judgment's not final. Res judicata doesn't apply because the facts have not yet come to pass. And if I'm going to jump back to Judge Hankinson's question about why don't you go get a quadro that day, I think parties to this day still have this problem. There's a case that came out of Houston 2 months ago, Marshall v. Priest, where it's a fairly recent divorce. But the parties went back in and modified an existing quadro, added the Taggart formula to the quadro, which was not in the decree, added the date of valuation, and the 14th Court of Appeals found that was not a substantive modification to the decree. It's because the quadro wasn't quite good enough, the facts had changed, they had to satisfy the plan administrator. You know, the problem with the quadros will be ongoing. And what this court has for today is coming up with a set of the rules that the state can order.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. These cases, complete the argument in these cases. The court will take another brief recess.
All rise.